Starts now. Prayer.
God, we lay aside everything that we have known about addiction, alcoholism, the big book, the 12 steps, this workshop, myself, and especially you, God, so I can have an open mind and a new experience with all of these things. Help me see the truth. Amen.
All right, this one's called Healing. Healing occurs when pain has lost its value. It's common to resist the idea that those who want to be healed will be. Are hospitals really full of people who have chosen to be sick? The Course says yes. Accepting responsibility for some experiences is tolerable. For instance, why would we deny that our balance is impaired if we consume too much alcohol or that running a red light can trigger an accident? However, admitting we're responsible for every aspect of our lives, each joy and every sorrow, is unbearable at first. Fortunately, we do not have to accept and understand overnight how our material world unfolds. Absorbing the news that we do reap what we have sown comes in stages. But how does this explain healing, or lack thereof? Monitoring our thoughts about the significant issues as well as the small ones enlightens us about our health. If we let the ego determine how we react, we can be certain it will try in some fashion to control the actions and emotions of others. Our weakened condition is a tool the ego has valued too often. Laying it aside for good will change our health forever. If my mind is at peace, I will be well today. So, appreciate you guys hanging with us. We only have five more sessions tonight? So, just kidding. So, how do the defects start to soften? Is it just a prayer and then we're good? Does it seem like anything that we've done to this point in the steps has just been a prayer or a promise or something like that, and then it just comes? Or does it seem like we got to do something? Yeah, we got to do something. Thank you. Appreciate you being awake over there. Some sort of action needs to take place in order to consummate the process. And the process of softening our defects comes but with an action that sounds a lot like this. When we go out and knock on the doors and make amends to the people that we've harmed. And then, you know, it's kind of this crazy thing. Like, when we knock on enough doors and we make amends for being an asshole, it starts to occur to us that maybe I'm an asshole. If I have to go make amends to people for stealing from them, and I get to see what it does to them, and I get to see how it tears at their soul, and what I robbed them of, really, because it wasn't really what I stole. It was their peace of mind or their presence or their belief about me. Then I start to see this impact, and I start to have this understanding of how my actions have a ripple effect that is so far greater than anything I could imagine. So for years, my wife worked in the ER, and she worked overnight in the ER for several of those years because it paid better, and it was very convenient for my drinking career, because when she would go to work at 7 p.m. and I was getting home around 7 p.m., I had 12 hours to tear it up and no adult supervision whatsoever, and it was great. And it worked really well. But when her schedule started to shift and she was doing some 10 to 10 shifts and stuff like that, and she would come home and try to wake me up to tell me to go upstairs to bed, and she couldn't move me because I was sleeping on the couch, passed out. You know, it started to have different effects in the relationships. And then the times where I would go out after work for a couple of drinks, and then a couple people would leave, and I'd have a couple more drinks, and then a couple people would leave, and I'd have a couple more drinks, and then I'm riding home and having to drive through a roadblock and somehow not getting thrown in jail for a DUI. And the whole time she's calling me, but I've taken the battery out of my phone because I sure as hell don't want her to hear where I've been. And she's dealing with all the shit that she's dealing with at work. When she walks in the door, she might actually be dealing with an insane person. And she's not, she's kind of in a bothered state herself, right? So what's fascinating is that it occurred to me that here I've got this list of these people that I've harmed, that I know that I've harmed. And then there's this other group of people. Okay. Every single person that my wife worked with that had to hear about me, all of her friends that had to hear about me, all of the husbands of her coworkers that had to deal with my actions because their wife didn't want them to act like me. And you start to realize, I've had this ripple effect where I've completely destroyed the planet and everybody in it. But yet I've got this list of people that I know that I've done harm to, and I'm not willing to go approach them. But there's this other list of all these people that I don't even know that I've harmed, and I can't fix that because I don't know who they are. So there's this understanding that in the eighth step, it says, it repeats a word. Bill Wilson didn't repeat too many words in the book that often, but it says, made a list of some of the people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to just a few of them. Right? Is that what it says? What does it say?
All.
All, okay. Does anybody know what all means?
Everybody.
What about ex-girlfriends? What about drug dealers? What about those people I don't really like? Well, shit. I thought this was going to be a fun step. Right? But we forget that our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Well, how do I do that? By going out and starting to repair the wreckage of the past. You see, there's this whole list of people that I thought that, you know, I may have harmed them, but they got some shit on me that they owe me about too, right? And that mother-in-law that was real judgmental and told me what she thought, right? When I go and make amends to her for wrecking the lives of her family and her grandchildren. And what I learned in that conversation is that they thought I was a son to them. And that she was actually really close friends with my parents, but as a result of me no longer being married to her daughter, they lost friends in the process. Oh, didn't see that one. Right? Or the boss that I had a resentment against that I was unwilling to make amends to because he was just an asshole. He talked to me. He threatened to fire me multiple times. You know, but if we actually did a thorough fifth step, what we realize is that the reasons why he threatened to fire me was because I was dicking around with millions of dollars of our best client's money and not paying the guy. And that guy literally had the ability to screw up multiple projects that my company was working on. And what he said is, I don't understand why I don't fire you. It must be because I like you. You know what the mind remembered? He threatened to fire me. And so when I'm sitting there and I hear this guy's name, I'm working for a different firm, and I hear his name, somebody walking down the hallway saying this guy's name, and I feel this cringe, like, oh, I hate that motherfucker. Right? And then the universe has this wonderful way of exposing your game to you, right? And so I heard that guy's name, and I cringed. And over the course of the next week, I became aware of things. Like, why do I always close my letters the way that I do? Oh, yeah, Bill taught me that. Why do I always put this information when I'm putting in a request for money? Oh, yeah, because Bill showed me that. Why do I always do this? Oh, yeah, Bill showed me that. And I start to realize, damn, this dude taught me a lot. And it softens. And I'm willing to approach him. And I approach him. And I sit down and make the formal amends. And weeks later, that same guy's in my office and says his name again. And I smile. What changed? He didn't become a different person. The way that I viewed him changed. As a result of the amend that I was making to him, a healing happened. And so the process of amends does this to us. The process of amends gives us this vantage point to understand how not only we affect the other people when we ask them the questions of, how did what I do to you make you feel? And how do I make it right with you, right? So, get this. This is crazy. So, let's say I stole $10,000 from my guy. And I go to make amends to him. And I say, how do I make it right with you? And he says, pay me my fucking money. Does that sound reasonable? And he may have said it in an impolite way, but he just wants his money. When is the amend complete? when I pay them all the money I owe them, right? Not just when I sit down across from them, when I actually pay him, when I actually complete the amend. Amend is to make whole. Okay? We're not apologizing. Apologizing sometimes is admitting fault or not. It's making, just saying I'm sorry. But amending is actually making whole, completing the cycle. Because what happens is I take all these little pieces out of the universe, and the universe has been, it's not whole. And the amends are complete when I put all of those pieces back. Now, I've got multiple of them where I think I owe some people some money, but I'm not sure because they got their house back and stuff like this. And these people, I've attempted to contact them multiple times, run into them in public and asked if we could sit down. And they said, just call me or email me. And they don't call me back. I can't fix that stuff, right? There's a lot of these that the people, I pissed them off so bad they don't want to see me. But I'm willing to do it. And I'm willing to make that approach. And I absolutely, if they were to call me today, I would go do it. So we're going to talk more about some of these, but I feel like Tarek's got some stuff he wants to say too.
You know, for the first 8 or 9 years of sponsoring guys, most of the men I've sponsored, they get to step 9 and they start having some difficulties. They're not as quite as gung-ho about the whole process, and they tend to start dragging their feet in most situations. And we would have conversations about why they were having so much difficulty with their 9th step in making these amends. And it struck me about 2 to 3 years ago that it's not the 9th step all these individuals are having trouble with. It's the 8th step. They've never even become willing to make amends to all of the people, let alone actually going through and making the amends in the 9th step. So one thing we got to understand about this process is that the 8th step is where you and I get free. When I make that official contact to express a willingness to meet, to make an amends for a harm I caused you in the past, would you be willing to sit down with me so we can discuss this? There's so much fear, and I have watched it in the past 2 weeks with a guy I'm currently taking through the steps. Because what I instructed him after, you know, he's got these note cards that we work with. You put the person's name on the front of the note card. You put a bunch of bullets for the harms that you caused. Really short notes just to remind you of what went down. Contact information. And I said, look, man, you're going to sit down and you're going to take these 20 cards. Like we put a plus-minus system. Plus is for I'm willing. Minus is I don't know where they are. Plus would be I'm willing and I know where they are. Minus plus is I'm not willing to make this amends, but I know where this person is. The minus-minus would be I'm not willing to make the amends and I don't know how to contact this person or find them. And so we had this stack of cards. I think he's got like 80 amends. And I said, look, I want you to take 20 of your plus pluses, and I want you to sit down, and I want you to contact all of them. Make an approach to all of them, and I guarantee you, maybe 2-3 people will respond to you, right? And the numbers were a little bit higher in this case, because I think he ended up with 4 out of 16, or 4 out of 20. But it took him an entire 2 weeks, because I kept on telling him, I want you to do it in one sitting, right? And then he was done with the 20, and the last phone call, he was like, yeah, I'm just going to give it a few weeks, then I'm going to go back and contact the ones that didn't respond. I was like, no. I was like, you leave these alone for a month, you get out 20 new ones, and you approach all 20 of those in one sitting. All right? Because I can see his fear is not about making the amends, really. He's terrified to even contact someone he hasn't talked to in 10 years. And I've been talking about this for the past few years. Whenever I do workshops on 8 and 9, and I saw it, and like it was so like in my face. I was like, wow, he's terrified to even contact these people. So he hasn't completed the 8th step. He hasn't become willing right? And there's so much freedom that happens when we just make the approach, expressing our willingness to sit down. And hopefully, you know, next week when we talk, he's made some more progress on the second 20. But, you know, amends is it's the exciting part of this process. It's also the most terrifying. So my sponsor held my hand through the entire first 7 steps. And then when we got to steps 8, he helped me a little bit with 8, but he couldn't go to the amends with me. And so the first step is the surrender to the substance. The third step is the surrender to self. The eighth step are the ultimate surrender. So I was sitting at lunch a couple years ago with this amazing man and wife that run a ministry, and their main focus is to help families who have loved ones that are struggling with addiction and to have all the resources available to them. And so I'm sitting at lunch with them, and they're Christian. They're good Christians, and they're explaining why I don't do Bible study at the recovery program I used to have, and why not going to church is sufficient, and why can't they develop this relationship with God by studying the Word and being active in their church community. And it was along the lines of what Brandon said. I said an addict or an alcoholic that has lost completely power, choice, and control, where they're being compelled by an inside force, really, to move in certain directions because of their desire to continue their relationship with drugs and alcohol, that individual has to have a direct experience with the power called God. And that process of the direct experience with God, I think, takes place in the amends process more than any other step. Because of the fear, the faith has to show up. The trust in the process has to be there. And then as you gain momentum and traction in making all of these amends, this phenomenal change takes place. Where in the beginning, remember, flimsy reed, right? Just a little bit of willingness. Based on a foundation of complete surrender, willingness, I make a decision. I take action. I get results. This willingness starts to turn into this, I'm willing to believe. And then I make some more decisions, I take some more action, I get some more results, and I don't know when it happens, willing to believe becomes I believe. And then we make more decisions, we take more actions, and somewhere along the way, the belief becomes faith. And then we continue with that process, and one day I wake up and I have what's called trust. All of those things I just described are completely different. The step that created trust for me, the steps, plural, was the eighth and ninth step. So I wasn't aware of this concept I'm sharing with you guys about this eighth step and willingness, but what I've watched, you know, over the last several years with men I've sponsored, and specifically when I had my recovery program, was how paralyzing the idea of approaching people from our past. Not the stuff that's present, like people that are currently in my life that I have an active relationship with, they don't tend to terrify us. They're emotional, they're sad, they're hard, no doubt. But when I have to find a guy that I haven't seen in 15 years because I stole a bunch of shit from him, that's scary. Right, I have no idea what this person's been through in 15 years, but I got to make this right. Those were the amends that created the most fear for me. And most of them went well. Some of the people didn't want to see me. I'm glad you're doing well. I never want to see you again. Peace. I
was like, okay. Have a nice life.
Yeah. Some just did not respond. I'd say out of, you know, when I got sober, I made a list. And you're willing, it's in my trunk of my car if anybody wants to see it. But I had 4 pieces of paper, the ones I was willing to make now, later, maybe, and never. And over the first few years, before I transferred what I had left to note cards, I would add people because I would hear something at a meeting. So I would go back to my list and, damn, I got to find this person. And I got on these websites, and I used social media to find people a lot. And I would send approach letters. I'd never make amends, you know, unless the person I was approaching is like, this is the way I want to do it, which was other. I had a bunch of phone calls. They insisted on using the phone. But I didn't do, I don't think I made any amends via electronic, you know, exchanges. And it took me 8.5 years to approach 230 people in institutions. And now I've been clean, you know, almost 13 years, and I've paid back. Now I'm approaching, and I've got another financial amends I'm making next week. I'm approaching $23,000 that I've paid back, and I'm not done. I continue. I got to try to send it back out into the universe or get it back in the hands of the people whose money it was. And of those 230, I'd say about 30 of them were financial amends. The other 200, I'd say somewhere between 40 to 50, I can't really tell you an exact number, either didn't respond or said, I'm glad you're doing well, I don't need to see you. Right? But those other 150 were face-to-face direct amends that I made, the majority of them. And I've had some magical experiences. I could probably sit up here for an entire Saturday and talk about the amends process. It's probably the most common phone call I get, Brandon Scarborough. I love Brandon for so many reasons, but Brandon at least probably once a month, maybe, will give me a call about something that has to do, it may not even be an amends for him, maybe somebody he sponsors. I like those phone calls, right? And the people come to me because I love talking about the amends process. And I mean, think about it, guys. I've been going to meetings, and I've been to a lot of meetings. I've been to very few meetings about the ninth step and the eighth step. Most of the meetings I go to are on steps 1, 2, and 3, and 12, and sometimes step 11. Very few meetings on step 10, very few meetings on steps 8 and 9, and you know 6 and 7's in there sometimes, and 4 and 5, but I'm telling you, like the amends process, and then you when people do talk, a lot of people share their experience, it's like, you know, there's nothing that gets me in the head when I'm sitting and listening to someone talk about making amends, and all they talk about, and they've been sober for 30 plus years, and they talk about the family and the IRS, right? And to me, it's like, it's a false representation of the lengths we have to go to, or way more. IRS and my family, look, they were emotional amends that I made. IRS was easy. I picked them up and said, hey, I owe you. Can I send you some money every month? I've got no emotional connection to that other than I hate giving money out, but it's their money. With my mom and my dad and my grandmother and my brother and a couple of my aunts, it was a different. It was emotional, but I was not afraid to show up. Right? But then when I got to like the ex-girlfriends that I dated 10 and 15 years ago, I made amends to every ex-girlfriend. I made amends to women that I wasn't necessarily in a committed relationship with, but I was in a sexual relationship with for an extended period of time. I made amends to every person I'd ever worked for, right? And then there were companies I worked for that I was fired from where I had people. We worked on teams. Do you think me not doing my share of the load affected the team members? Of course it did. And then I had a bunch of friends that I ran around selling drugs with, and I owed them a bunch of money. I paid all them back. Right now, when I robbed people down on the corner, you know, I would do the whole, you know, dine and dash deal. You know, give me $100, here's $20, and I'm ripping and running. I didn't know who those people were, so what I did was I went to the homeless shelter and I donated money to the homeless shelter. So I got the money back into the universe, the best of my recollection of how much I had stolen. But those amends, like going to the VA hospital where I used to steal Oxycontin and Xanax out of the vets' cars, I was a valet. And so I had to do some type of calculation to explain to, like, I would take money, quarters. By the end of the day, I've got $20 in quarters shaking in my pocket. I've got either 40s or 80s in my pocket, and I've got bars. And I did this off and on for 2 years while I worked there. And so I got with Chris, and we came up with this number. And so I walk into the VA hospital, right? And I went to like, I think I went to human resources first and explained to them what I was trying to do, that I had, you know, stolen things out of the vet's cars when I was a valet, and I've come up with this number of the money I owe. There's no way to know who it was, but I would like to give this to you, to the hospital, you know, give it to a charity or something. And they looked at me like I was from another planet. I'll never forget, it was these two women, and they looked at each other like, where should we send him? They sent me to another department. I want to say it was like public relations or something, right? I go there. I give them the same spiel. What are you doing? Like, they had no, they couldn't wrap their minds around, when did you work here? What are you talking about? And so you got to remember, at this point, that amends I probably made when I was like 3 or 4 years sober. So we're talking 9 years since this took place, all right? They send me upstairs to the deputy, like, person. Not the director, but the deputy director of the VA hospital. He wouldn't even come out and see me. I had to talk to his assistant out front. And she's like, I don't know. Why don't you write him a letter and email it to this email address? So I wrote this lengthy letter to the VA hospital about what I had done. And I never got a response. Finally, I found out that there's a place up in Virginia called the Fisher House, which helps vets when they come back from being in active duty overseas. It helps them get, you know, reacclimated to society with, you know, jobs and all that kind of stuff. So I donated the money there. But I'm telling you, that day at the VA hospital, I was terrified to walk up in there. You know, but I went through the process, and what came out on the other end was I had more trust in this process. I had more trust in my higher power. And so as our steps are laid out where the first step I call self-examination. The second step is I have to examine how I'm oriented or what my attitude is towards the God idea. And the third step, it's actually about turning to my fellows, because it says, God, please take away my difficulties so victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. When I bear witness, I'm giving my testimony. I'm up here right now giving you, I'm bearing witness to the power of God in my life. All right, and that's what that third step about. Steps 4, 5, and 6 are back in self-examination. Step 7, I'm turning back to God. Steps 8 and 9, I'm turning back to my fellows. Step 10, self-examination. Step 11, I turn to God. Step 12, I'm back with my fellows. That process is repeated over and over and over. And so, if the implication in the first step is in the fourth step is true, and resentment is the number one offender, it destroys more addicts and alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease and shuts us off from the sunlight of the Spirit. They're assuming that we agree that the sunlight of the Spirit resides in other people as well as us. So if I'm shut off from the people around me, I am going to be shut off from God. And if you ripped and ran like I did, by any means necessary, I was getting high. You hurt a lot of people, whether you're aware of it or not. That ripple effect that Brandon was talking about. You know, there was a day when I woke up and realized not only did I owe all my ex-girlfriends amends, I owed all their parents amends. So I had to go do those.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah. One of the best immense experiences I had was I was invited to dinner with my ex-girlfriend and her mother, her sister, her brother-in-law, and I owed them all amends. And I got to make the amends, and she was smoking meth at the time, and they didn't know what to do with her. So I got to walk them through the whole process of, this is what I think you guys should do to get her some help and stuff. You know, I had an amends with the CEO of one of the companies I worked for. I owed 4 people at that company amends. He was the last one I did. And when I asked him what I could do to make it right, he wanted me to 12-step his son. Now, I tried to contact this young man for almost 3 years before I got him to meet me for lunch. And I 12-stepped him. I met with him. I owed the son an amends. You know, it was a sad situation because he was so shot out. You know, I think he was hearing voices while he was having lunch with me that day because he kept on looking around as if he was looking for somebody or somebody was after him. But I completed the amends to his dad, right? That's what his dad asked me to do. So I had sex with my best friend's fiance. You know, our society says if you pull some shit like that, that relationship is broken and can never be repaired. When I got sober, I made amends to her, and I made amends to him. And we had shattered an entire group of friends because a few of our friends knew what was going on, and he didn't know. And they came to us and said, if you don't tell him, we're going to tell him. And so once it all got out, people started taking sides. So there was like a group of like 20 friends. And they were forced to pick sides. So I had to go through and make amends to everyone in that circle of friends. I wrecked it. And I made amends to him. And we began to rebuild our relationship. And in 2010, I went to a retreat. And the guy facilitating the retreat asked us to bring an artifact that has significant meaning. And the artifact I brought, which is in my car right now, is a pendant. It was a rock, a crystal, or you know, a mineral that has been wrapped so it could be worn as a pendant. And he gave it to me, you know, because he said, this is a gift. You know, I love you. I want you to have something. I made this for you. This is a guy whose wife I slept with, or fiance I slept with. And so when I got up at the retreat the first night, we all had to tell our stories associated with our artifacts. And that's the power of this program. I had a guy who used to give me, he would give me 1,000 hits of ecstasy. I could go sell them and come back and pay him the money. I owed him thousands and thousands of dollars because he gave me 1,000 rolls and I disappeared. Right? So I got clean in 2007. I did not approach that man until July of 2013. I had heard, because I had some friends that still would run into him from time to time, and he would make comments about wanting to hurt me if he ever saw me again. And so I decided, you know what, this one might have to hold off. I'm not quite comfortable about making this one. But then in July of 2013, man, for some reason, I said, you know what, I got to make this amends. So I called him up. I expressed what I was trying to do, and he goes, why don't you come over to my house? And I'm just like, fuck, I'm not sure I want to do this. But I went over to his house, and we sat down, and we had a great talk. And every time I made a financial amends, I took money. The very first time I met with them, I didn't show up to set up a payment plan. I came with the first payment. If I work with you, that's a requirement. You don't go to a financial amends and not have a payment ready in hand. And so we sit down. I brought $300 that first time, I think, $300 or $400. And I said, look, man, I'm going to try to pay you every month. I'm going to pay you as much as I can. 1 month might be $100. 1 month might be $500. It took me 4 years to pay this man back. November of 2017. So that was 4 years and 4 months it took me to pay back all that money. His brother-in-law is an alcoholic. And he was in detox over at Peachburg. And this man, who at one point had told people he was going to hurt me, calls me up and says, I need you to do what you do with my brother-in-law. So I got to go to Peachford. I picked him up. I 12-stepped him, took him out to dinner, met with the family, sat down, did what the family afterward talks about, and I worked with him up to step four, and then he disappeared. But the fact that I even got the opportunity to do that was incredible. All right. Later on, he's starting a nonprofit, and he calls me up to come over to his house because he has some ideas he wants to bounce off of me. Right? This is a guy I ripped off, and now 4 years later, after paying him back his money, I didn't give him my money, I'm giving him his money back, that was available. To have that type of interaction with someone that you hurt, you created harm. The last one I want to talk about, and I've got a few more. I've got a whole list here. I mean, I just love talking about this because this, I want you to know that it's possible. It is possible to make all these amends. You know, and like the only family member that's even on my list of amends that I like to talk about is my dad. Right? And I don't even have time because there's one that's, I think, even more powerful. Which was, in 2000, I was dating a girl. We'd been together for like almost 3 years. And I was doing a lot of cocaine. And I was very paranoid. But I got this idea stuck in my head that she was cheating on me. Right? And so what I did was one night I stalked her. I followed her around one night because I thought she was cheating on me with this bartender. And she was. I went, and she went to an apartment. And at the time, I didn't know where he lived. And I parked my car across the street, and I sat there all night. Right? And then I remember, like, at some point, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Kroger and buy a rose real quick. I'm going to put the rose on her car. Then I'm going to go sit in my car and wait.
Creepy.
Yeah. And so she finally comes out, and she sees the rose and freaks out and runs back inside. So I sit in my car for a while longer, and finally I've had enough. And so I go and I bust the door down, and you know, I catch my girlfriend cheating on me, and I get violent. You know, I pushed her up against the wall, and I pushed him back down. And I was yelling, and then I proceeded to do some other things, and then I left. And there's a whole other amends that transpired, because where I went to after that was her sister's house. And that's why I was making amends for that. But, so when I got clean, this guy was on my never list. I am never making amends to this dude, because he and I had like the same friends. We were more like acquaintances, we weren't boys. But, you know, there's that code, right? And who would know? Years later, I'd violate the ultimate code. You know, I would sleep with my best friend's fiance. And so I was between year three and year four, I'm driving. I was doing outside sales for a company. I'm driving to this part of town, and I'm going to pass right by this bar, right? I've never even considered making this amends up to this point. I think every time I looked at it, I was like, yeah, that'll be the last one. And
right after you burn that place down, right?
The voices, the voice in my head, intuition, whatever you want to call it, it's like, hey, he might be at the bar. You should stop in and try to make this amends. And I'm like, I'm trying to push it out like you're talking about, pushing those thugs. I don't want that thought in my mind. And then I said to myself, you know, it's the middle of the day. He's a bartender. He gets the good shifts. He's worked there forever. The chances of him being there when you walk in the middle of the afternoon are slim to none. But you can call your sponsor up and tell him how you finally became willing to make that amends.
Right? Gold star.
Yeah. And so I went into the bar, and he was standing right behind it.
Son of a bitch.
And I was like, hey, man, how's it going? Can I grab 5 minutes of your time? I do not recommend this ever. Like, don't blindside people with amends. That's the worst thing in the world.
I want to force this amends on you.
Like the sponsee I was talking about, we were having conversations about this. I was like, you cannot just tell someone you want to grab a cup of coffee and then sit down with them and unload an amends on them. They need their own mental preparation, right? And but this was like, but you're going to be thrust into situations like that. You try to observe the rule of letting everyone know, but every once in a while, you're like, well, this is just the way it's got to be right now. And so we sat down, and thank God I had teachers that told me that to forget my part. They said, look for your own mistakes and where you were at fault. Because after I caught them, I did some heinous shit to this guy. Okay, and the way I did it was through people, his friends. And so I was there to own those mistakes. And so I expressed why I was there. I explained to him, you know, that I wanted to make amends. I wanted to repair the damage I created. I asked him if he wanted to talk about it or if I left anything out. And when I said, hey, do you want to talk about how this made you feel? Dude, he started bawling. Man, it was emotional. And he was making amends to me. And I'm telling you, this doesn't happen all the time. And we had a heartfelt conversation, and this is I'm building up to the real reason I want to tell this story. And so he and I became friends. My dad and I used to go into this place on Sunday, at least two Sundays a month we were in there, and Tony was always the guy that waited on us. He would come over, he'd give us a table, he would sit there and rap with us for about 5 minutes, and he would make sure we were taken good care of. And this went on for years, all right? Back in 2016, 2017, I was having lunch there with one of my grand sponsees. And Tony was there. And I'm talking, we gave each other hugs like we were boys from back in the day. And we sat there and we caught up. And I sat down to have lunch with my grand sponsee, and I told him the same story as I just told you. And he said, "You're full of shit. There is no way you caught that dude fucking your girlfriend." I was like, this is the power of God in action. That's what's possible. I was like, that's exactly how it went down. And I tell these stories because I want you to know that it's possible. Right? I'm not going to get up here and just talk about, you know, my IRS amends and just one other amends that was maybe emotional. Those amends I just described to you terrified the hell out of me. And there was a part of me that did not want to make these amends. Right? But by the time I've made enough amends, I start to notice that it's not about not getting high. It's about a spiritual path. It's about taking responsibility for your life. And it's about living the 12 steps. Because there's a sentence in our big book that says the spiritual life is not a theory, it has to be lived. It's on page 83. The spiritual life is not a theory, it has to be lived. And I'm telling you guys, that's a big part of living a spiritual life, is restoring relationships. The restoration of relationships. And it's how I believe you transition from this willingness to believe all the way to trust. So that's my spiel on the eighth and ninth step.
So I've got two I want to tell you about. I've got 20 I want to tell you about, but I got two that I'm going to tell you about. One of them was 2 weeks ago. I'm a guy that, like, things need to make sense. I'm a logic guy, right? And so when something doesn't fit into a logical situation, Brandon gets disturbed, right? And so I'm checking into this hotel, and they've got it set up so that the doors won't open because they're trying to protect the people in the hotel from the dreaded coronavirus, right? So you need your key to enter the hotel. Well, I haven't checked in yet, right? So there's a sign on the door that says, "Hotel only open to guests. Use your key. If you need to check in, use the phone on the wall." And I'm sitting there thinking, this doesn't make any fucking sense. Every person that now enters has to pick the phone up, touch the phone, talk into the phone for you to let them in the building so that you can protect your guests that now have all touched the fucking phone. Right? It's the end of a day, been driving all day. Just come on. So I go in, and the girl lets me in, and I'm checking in, and she's got her mask on, and I make some comment about that, and I was a little pissy, not too bad, but I was a little pissy about it, and then I made some comment about her mask, and I was being playful, but because of the initial comment, I think I had already wrecked the energy between us. And so she gives me her key. I go up into the room. I take my stuff in there, and I sit down, and I'm like, man, I think you were a total dick to that girl when you checked in. Damn it. So I go downstairs, and I said, "Excuse me, miss. I think that when I came in, I was trying to make a joke, and I was talking about the phone, and I think that I was totally rude and a jerk to you." And she goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. I actually thought it was kind of funny, but you probably couldn't see because I'm wearing a mask." But she looked at me and she goes, "Thank you anyway." thank you for coming down. She goes, people are clearly disturbed right now, and it's hard to deal with people, and the fact that you would even go out of your way to come down here and make that comment to me makes me feel good, so thank you. Okay? So it's amazing, because today I'll make a bunch of amends to the woman I'm married to for doing some shit, and you know, the common response I get when I make the amends is, oh, I didn't even notice. It's like, thank God. Whew! I'm doing a little better, right? I'm doing a little better that you didn't notice. Now, there's been plenty of them where I ask her how it made her feel, and she... We're still talking. Okay. What? Can I make it right with you? Don't do it again? Well, I did it last week, so I don't... I mean, I'll try. Okay, so the one that I really want to tell you about is... So, clearly, if you're anything like me, the person that's closest to you, if you're in a committed relationship or married or anything like that, the person that you're doing the most damage to absolutely is the person that you are married to or in the relationship with. And I terrorized this woman for 11 years. It was subtle. It was subtle. It was very manipulative and... financial ruin and unpredictability and never knowing what, you know, I mean, like, just wore ass out, you know, and the reality is I never did anything that was that bad that she could ever use as evidence to support leaving me to her parents and to everybody else. So it's like she had to build this case of little tiny things before they would believe that I was just a complete train wreck and ruining her life. But... you know, when she kicked me out, she was very, very angry. You know, she was hurt. We had made this commitment that we were going to raise these kids, we were going to live this life together, and I didn't hold up my end of the bargain. I failed utterly. And so, for the first several years of our relationship, it was very difficult to have a phone conversation with her without her expressing to me what was wrong with me. Most of them ended in not nice words and me saying, okay, I'm going to hang up now because you're repeating the same thing that you've told me the last five times that you talked to me. And I really tried to do better, right? But this fascinating thing happened as I started getting into this relationship with this other woman that I'm now married to, and this, it was very evident that the woman that I'm now married to, I wanted to marry her, and it was very clear that I had to absolutely clean up the relationship with my former wife before I could go wreck another relationship. Which brings me to a point. If you've got a bunch of amends with... if you're having trouble having intimate relationships with another person, if you look, you probably have a lot of amends in intimate relationships with other people. Okay? If you are having money problems, you probably have a bunch of amends where you owe money. If you're having trouble finding a consistent career, you probably have a bunch of amends in your career. Okay? It's this spiritual axiom where it all connects. Whatever area you are most struggling in, you got to figure out what amends are missing in that area. Okay? So I'm getting ready to ask this other woman to marry me, but I still haven't finished cleaning up the relationship with the other woman, the mother of my children. And so I was at this situation where I knew I had to make amends to her. So I made amends to her. The relationship did improve for a number of years. But what happened over the next several years was actually fascinating. As she got engaged to another guy, Imagine that. He was an alcoholic. Right? And he was putting her through hell. And he had moved out and he was threatening to come back and take a bunch of shit out of the house. And you know who she called to come change the locks on her house? She called me. When that guy finally went into the hospital and needed a 12-step call, she called me to go 12-step him. When he was threatening things because they bought this bedroom set together and he said it was worth this and she said it was worth that, she didn't have the money to pay it back, I gave her the money to pay him back. Whatever he asked, be done with him. And we worked out a deal where she was able to kind of not, it wasn't a gift, but she paid it back eventually. Okay, so the woman that I absolutely destroyed her life, I've become useful to. And then the other crazy thing that has happened is that this other guy that was married to the woman that I'm now married to demonstrates to me constantly how to be a shitty ex-husband. And I'm thankful for the man for that, because you know what has happened is I've become probably the... If there's a trophy of the best ex-husband, I got it. I pay early. I pay more than necessary. I don't argue. I take the kids whenever she needs help. I do all that stuff. Because to me, I can't ever fix what I did to her. But the universe has this crazy way of giving you opportunities to where you can, and that you can improve things, and that you can repair the damage of your past in other ways. Another way that the universe has provided that for me is it gives me a bunch of sponsees that are incapable of having effective relationships, and I get to coach them through how to start having effective relationships. There's two guys that I've sponsored that were incapable. When I say incapable, like, there is not a woman on this planet that would want to be with these guys. And they're married and they both have kids now. And I got a third one who's getting ready to get engaged, and it's fascinating to watch. Because this was a guy that couldn't get a relationship going either. And so if there's things within you that are broken, the universe fixes them through the amends process and continuing to work the spiritual path. You can believe us or not, but it's a really cool thing to participate in and watch. And because we've talked about...
Want my set? Let's start with that next session.
Okay.
Yeah. Just one disclaimer, not disclaimer, but I just want to emphasize something. The amends he described, and anyone ever describes in terms of like immediate family, the wife, like definitely the most collateral damage is the person you're in a relationship with. The amends I'm talking about are not more important than those amends. The amends are equally all important. Maybe as they go out from the center in terms of distance away, they're not as deep, but there is, I can only speak from my experience. My amends with my family didn't really do anything to increase my trust in God. They were awesome experiences, and I was given clear-cut directions on what I needed to do and how I have to practice my principles to the best of my ability in any affair that has to do with my family, because I can never really repay them. But it's not a living amends. I'm practicing these principles to the nth degree around these individuals. That's the goal here. And that's a whole other concept that I know Brandon would love to talk about later, and you can ask him after this session. But what I'm saying is I don't want to downplay any of the amends that anybody ever describes. But the reality is some amends are going to be so the fear associated with them. You know, I would go out on a limb and say, because I know Brandon so well, I don't think he was afraid to sit down with his ex-wife. There was something else going on that kept him from making that amends for a period of time, but the ones he's describing are just as important as the ones I described. So that's not what I'm talking about. I don't want you to think it's a degree of importance. What it is a degree of fear. And the more we overcome fear, the deeper our trust goes with God. When we're using our relationship with God to hit the fear head on. Does that make sense?
And we try to give you kind of a sampling of different amends when we're up here, and it seems like we go back to some of the same ones over and over again. And so I've got some of the coolest amends, some of my most favorite ones we didn't talk about. And I know Tarek's got a couple that are some of his favorites that he didn't talk about either. We're trying to give you an idea of what the process of amends actually looks like and what it can do in your life. Okay? I've done those scary ones. I've also done some... I paid back a parking ticket and had an incredible experience crying with a homeless guy in a wheelchair on the side of Piedmont Road in Atlanta as a result of paying a parking ticket down. I mean, like, what? It was the craziest thing. And that's one of my favorites, but it was a minuscule, unimportant amends, and it had a profound experience. The point is, you gotta do it because it's so freaking cool.
All right, let's come back at 7:45.